Okay, good evening, everyone. We were in the midst of a discussion about Heter Iska. You were both here last week, right? So we're discussing exactly what Heter Iska is and what it accomplishes and the basic way it works. So I want to discuss some more details of Heter Iska. When I was in Eretz Yisrael in the summer of 1995 for a few weeks, and there was a big tumult going on then, that there was a big problem. A lot of the banks, and Eretz Yisrael, the banks are Jewish banks, at least the ones that the Jews deal with, they're Jewish owned, and they had always worked with the Heter Iska, very often a Heter Iska Klali, which we mentioned last week, a general Heter Iska, which dictates that any transactions that are done between them and any other Jew will be automatically done according to the rules of Heter Iska, and they probably had personal specific Heter Iskas with anybody who wanted, and that was going on for a while, and then a lot of the banks started reneging on them. Why? Or refusing to do business anymore al pi Heter Iska, and claiming that they're not even going to honor the terms of the Heter Iskas that they had already. Why? Because apparently I think it was all predicated around one incident, but apparently a number of people who had taken out mortgages from the banks for a particular project, it was a particular building project in one specific city, where after many people borrowed a lot of money and paid a kablan, a contractor, to build them homes, he declared bankruptcy. And everybody, they all lost their money. And they said, okay, well, we lost our money, so that's what this is all about. Okay, so we took out, let's say they took out, $100,000 from the bank, and with a Heter Iska. That means $50,000 is a loan which they have to pay back. Okay, so they're on the hook $50,000. But the other $50,000 is a pikadon. The other $50,000 is the bank's money, which they are supposed to invest and try to make money on, and they did. They invested with this kaplan who was building an apartment for them, supposed to be building an apartment for them, which hopefully would be a good investment and would go up in price, like real estate often does, especially in Eretz Yisrael. So they invested in that, and they lost it, and they could prove they lost it, because everybody knows, it was public knowledge that this guy declared bankruptcy. It's easy to validate that happened, and that they gave the money there, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of people then came back to the bank and said, I'm very sorry, but we're only going to pay you back 50. Instead of, in other words, not only giving them their quote-unquote interest, but they're not even going to pay back the principal, 50% of the principal. So the banks, a number of the banks, or many of the banks, I don't know, all of them, said, I don't know exactly, but let's just put it in the extreme, they said, oh, this is for real? Well, no, we're not. It's not for real. You signed all these other papers, and we're gonna take it to court. Non-religious. We're gonna get the money out of it. So when that happened, so the postcom said, well, if they don't take it for real, then it's not real. It's not for real.
What did the court say?
I'm not sure how far it got. I obviously wasn't. I was there as a guest for a few weeks. I had no money, no mortgage, Baruch Hashem, from Israeli bank, no money deposit. I was an American just staying there for a few weeks. But I had heard about this, and in fact, I remember visiting a certain Rosh Hashiva that I knew, and he told me that this is on his mind. Right? One of the things that's really occupying, because it happened to be the summertime. It was, so I don't know if Yeshiva might have been off, but this is like taking up his time and energy right now to. All these talmidim of his as well who have mortgages in such banks and are now in a position where the bank is going to try to get money out of them shelo al pi din, shelo al pi halacha, and with the interest and everything. Plus, for sure, the banks at that point said, okay, for sure, that's it. We're not signing any more Heter Iskas, moving ahead. So now what about everybody who need to borrow money? Or even in Israel, apparently many people also work with overdraft. I think here it's a little bit less common. I don't know, maybe people do it here too, but here's what I think is much more common, that people they rely on overdraft, which means that they'll draw more money on their from the checking account than they have, and they'll pay a certain percentage for the, it's like basically borrowing money. The bank, whatever the arrangement is, bank will honor their checks up to whatever, I'll pick a number, you know, $2,000 past their balance, but they'll charge them interest on that, and that's also, it's all a pihetariska. So all the transactions that involve any form of a return were a pihetariska. So now all that is, it's out. No more, we're not doing heteriskas anymore, the majority of the banks. So the whole banking system, the whole economic system was going from Jews was in danger. So I remember that very clearly, and then I found in this Sefer, it's called Shvus Yitzchak by Rabbi Yitzchak Darji, who's a very chashuv Rav in Eretz Yisrael, has written many svarim now on various topics, and he was very close with Rabbi Yashiv, and a lot of in the svarim I've seen, he quotes Rabbi Yashiv extensively, and I've been told that he is a rather authentic source, that what he calls Rabbi Yashiv, you could assume is accurate. You know, unfortunately, many gedolim over the years have quoted Balpen and Svarim, and not necessarily accurately. I've been told, I can't vouch for every word in the Sefer either, but I've been told that he's considered a reliable source of Rabbi Yashiv's Pesachim. He was very close to them. Obviously, this Sefer on Ribbish just came out last year. Obviously, long Rabbi Yashiv has been gone many years. But I found in the Sefer just on Shabbos that he has a whole perek about that whole Maisa. He references it in brief in Tavshin and Hay that this happened, and he then goes through what Rabbi Yashiv recommended, and what he suggested, that okay, this is what we have to offer the banks. What I remember happening is that, as I said, I wasn't involved in any way in the inside circle in any by any means, but what I remember hearing was that eventually the banks realized, so I mean, it's not going to work because they're going to lose all the from business, and they'll find other ways. You know, from people will start opening up more banks or whatever. They're just going to lose all the from business, which they didn't want to do either, because there's a large percentage of the country, and probably maybe even a disproportionately larger people that were borrowing money, possibly, were for the from oil. So the banks eventually realized that okay, we have to compromise some. We have to agree to heter iska, but we want this to work out in a way that we're not going to be exposed to losing so much money as we are now. So Rabbi Yashiv sat down with him and worked out exactly like what they could do, how they could make it in a way that it would be less risky for the bank, and the bank would be perhaps willing to still go into it, and other details. So I found the whole paragraph, and I'd like to share some of the points that are discussed here. So one of the points, and these are discussed in others for him too, but of course, these are basic to heteriska, but he does it around, it revolves around this maisa and about the reaction of this maisa. So one of the things is that he stresses here, from Eliashiv, kishahamalva eino maskim lamischayv meheter iska, when the malva does not agree to that which the heter iska is mechayiv him, even if he doesn't agree, meaning he may sign that he agrees, he may state that he agrees, but if we know that he's really he's only doing it in order to get your money, and he has no intention, push come to shove, he has no intention of really complying with it, then he would like take the person, if the person wanted to utilize the heteriska to exempt himself from paying back any part of the loan, he would take him to court and try to get it from him in a secular court, then it's worthless. Then the heter, even if nothing goes wrong, even if the person, everybody pays on time and everything, but it's all real, every penny you're paying them above the principal is ribbis. That's not called iska, because iska is, he said it's all about agreement and consent and real intention to abide by what it says in the paper or by the conditions of the iska. And if that's not there, then the iska is not there. This is Rabbi Yashiv's position. No, I did, and some others, of course, as well. I did see that in the Sefer Bris Yehuda, he's not so convinced that this halacha. He Bris Yehuda, by the way, was Rabbi Yaakov Bloy, who the Bris Yehuda, I believe, was his first sefer, at least certainly was a very popular sefer, a thick sefer in Hilchos Ribbis, which for a while that was like the go-to sefer. Like he basically wrote the book on the topic, literally, and he was very, he was a big player in Hilchos Ribbis. And since he's no longer living now, but between the time of that sefer and the time when he passed away a few years ago, he wrote many, many more svarim, very popular. His svarim they're well organized, and they're thorough, and they're usable, and he was a reliable person. But the Rishu was his classic. many years later, he wrote a kitzer of his own sefer, because the Bris Yehuda, like a thick sefer, and you know, you have the, like the short version on top, and then if you really want to get it, there's long in the bottom. So he wrote another sefer where it's much more, you know, much more like a kitzer of his own sefer, which is like a more practical guide, not a, you know, 20-page pamphlet. It's still a sefer, but it's much easier. It's called Ikrei Dinim, and it's easy to use. So in between, many other people wrote Sfarim, but he's quoted, many others from quote him, or they disagree, v'chul. And his second sefer, some things he changed, some things he was more machma, less machma. So he writes there.
He quote the people who disagreed with him?
Occasionally, yeah. I see him quote this sefer here, Mishnas Rivas. Mishnas Rivas quotes him a lot, and then he quotes the Mishnas Rivas. And they each have two. Mishnah Rivas has two editions. So yeah, it is interesting that you do find that to some extent. But anyway, so he writes there that of course, if you know in advance that the Malva doesn't mean it, the Malva has no intention of agreeing to the. He's just telling you this because he wants your money. He wants the quote unquote. He wants to do the loan, but he has no intention of abiding by the Heter Iska rules. If it comes to it, then he agrees that you shouldn't go into it. But if you did go into it and he signed. He suggests that he feels a good side to say that the person signed to it, he committed himself, and he says if at the end of the day something goes wrong and you want to play your cards and say that look I lost the money and here are my edim or whatever I have here's my shvuah whatever is necessary, and he refuses to cooperate with that and he takes you to court, so it doesn't mean and you, even if you end up paying, you didn't pay ribis, it's gezel. He's just stealing money. That's not called ribbis. That's called he's stealing money.
Hey, is this a ribbis machlokes or it's just machlokes in general? Like heter, not heter heter mechira, same spiel, no?
Not exactly, because the heter mechira, the shaila is whether it's okay altogether, whether it's authentic. There are many reasons, many pikpukim in the heter iska, including the fact that you're not allowed to sell Eretz Yisrael to a guy. You know, that's one of the times. Many pikpukim on heter mechira that even in its best form, it's not valid. It's certainly not valid, even though the great goyin, Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spector, was matrid back in the 1800s, but they say he was matrid when he was living from Europe, where he was, they depicted a scene, which might have been the case then, of literally pikuach nefesh, that if the farmers have to stop working for a year, they're going to be people dying of starvation, families that literally can't feed their kids, and so he was matrid based on the chashash of pikuach nefesh. But since then, many, you know, especially in recent years, many of the top gedolim, I'd say the majority of the top gedolim, are opposed to it. There are, I won't say everyone, but the majority of the top gedolim were strongly opposed to the heter mechira. Here, we're not saying they're opposed to heter iska, although I mentioned last week some gedolim are opposed to heter iska, but many are not opposed to heter iska if it's done right. The problem, they're arguing here, do you need it to be done right? Do you need both parties to really be on the same page and really mean it? Or don't you need that? Do you need them just to agree? As long as the bank agrees, so then I can go into it with them, and I for my own good, I bet hopefully I'll be able to make the payments and won't come to the problem. But Isabel Rashi is saying no, it doesn't make a difference. Even if you make every single payment on time and Shalom Yisrael, you pay it off after 30 years and without a hitch, you paid ribis for 30 years. Because since the bank didn't really mean it, and they had no intention of this niska, even though they said it. But since what do you mean? Dvar b'shebel evenim zarim, right? If you say one thing and sign one thing and you mean something else, normally we disregard what you mean. But not if it's obvious, and not if it's clear that you don't really mean it. So, like something like dvar b'shebel evenim zarim kaladim. So I think Rabbi Yash was looking at it that if you know you're dealing with a person who's not Torah observant, And he's shown his past history has shown that he doesn't really mean it, or you know that through other factors, then he held the heter iska is worthless. Whereas the Bris Yehuda is claiming that is if it's signed and sealed, and there, so he sees a strong side to say that it's valid, and if you end up getting taken to court because you want to pat yourself the heter iska, they're gazlanim. We had just the similar type of thing happen here in the United States. When I was living in Chicago, this is back in the early 1990s, not that old, in the early 1990s, and I have personal experience with it because we wanted to borrow, there was a number of Jewish-owned banks in Chicago, at least there were then, and I think there still may be, there was a particular bank which was Jewish-owned bank which was offering a $15,000 loan to people at a very reasonable rate, and they would do it with a heter iska. Now the owner, from what I recall, wasn't Mamish Frum, but he had connections with with the Frum. He was involved a little bit in the Kiruv place, and so he had the risk of the wind with Heteriska, and we had reason to then for his personal reasons to want to take out such a loan. The problem was that they were writing in the Heter Iska, they were writing a fine, nice Heter Iska, but then there was a line at the bottom, I think it was on the Heter Iska itself, if not, it was certainly on one of the other papers, saying that this document, I mean, the Heter Iska, is meant for, solely for religious purposes, and it has no bearing, in a secular court, or no real meaning as to defining the transaction. So it definitely says something about it should carry no weight in a secular court. So the shaila was, so is that still a heter iska, or is that a joke? Is that I mentioned last week, if you write in the heter iska that at the end of the day, come what may, but Plony takes full responsibility to pay back every penny, then I said, then that's not a heter iska, then that's anduia. What about this? This is not saying we're anduia, we're just saying it's a religious document. So one argument was, well, that's all we need it to be. It says it will not have any standing in the secular court. Who cares about the secular court? I'm dealing with a Jew. He can't take me to secular court. If he takes me to secular court, so he's a goslin. But meanwhile, it's a heter iska. Hopefully, I won't get. Hopefully, I'll pay back the money on time, and it won't come to that. But if it comes, but what that's fine. It's a heter iska, and I only need it to have Jewish meaning. I don't care what the non-Jews think about it, what the court of land. That was one opinion. There were, Chashev Rabbanim said that, but I remember the time also Rabbi Yashav, it was said in there, Rabbi Yashav, that it's chulcha v'tzlula. I think it's a big joke. If they write that in the bottom, the whole thing is a joke, which fits exactly with what I saw in the Sefer now. That it means that they're writing that because they're really not agreeing to these terms. They're just doing it to make you. If the only way you'll borrow the money is if we sign this document, fine, we'll sign this document, but we're with a disclaimer at the bottom. So remember the Simcha Rabbi Yashav. It's not good. There were quotes from other gedolim that it is good, and so some people did it, some people didn't do it, whatever it may be. So that's the idea here. Okay, so now what I did see though in a number of I saw brought down, I think it might even be in here, but I saw also from the Minchas Yitzchak or Dayan Weiss that at the same time, even if you know that the person on the other side doesn't really hold the heter iska and doesn't care about it and would not abide by it, it's only a problem for you to be the borrower, to be like to take out a mortgage from them, etc. But let's say you wanted to put money you wanted to deposit money with the bank, which is also a loan, but you're loaning the bank money. That's good. It's called, anytime you put money in the bank, it's considered a loan, but I'm the lender, they're the borrower, and I get whatever, I get interest on my loan, or I get whatever benefits I get, and that's, we do, I'll pay heter iska. That's fine, because there it's only for their benefit, because if we go without a heter iska, then they'll owe me the money no matter what. The heter iska just gives them the rights that if they could prove they lost their money, so they're pater. It's no harm to them. If they're the borrower and I'm the lender, which then it's no harm. So he said that you could do. You could still deposit money in the bank and collect ribis from the bank, that you could do with the heter iska, even if though they don't really hold of it. But with as long as they understand it, as long as they basically understand that this is a heter iska, this is not a loan. That's what he said. But to be the one who's borrowing the money, then you have a problem, because if the lender is not going to abide by it, then it's a problem. Okay. So I just mentioned one other point that I saw in the course of looking through. We mentioned last week that in heter iska, typically what it will say is that with regards to if the person wants to claim he lost the money, that the investment went sour, he has to bring two eidim. And but if he wants to claim that I didn't lose the money, I had profits, but my profits were not, my profits were only like basically 2%, I promised you that if I can't prove otherwise, I'll pay you 10%. But I'm saying I proved 2%, so how do I prove it? I'm sorry, I profited on 2%. How do I prove it? So I have to take a shvua. We said it because there it's not realistic to require Aiden. How are Aiden going to know exactly how much money? They could know, perhaps. You could bring Aiden if you lost the money, you went bankrupt, or the deal went sour. It's more shaykh, but it's not so shaykh for Aiden to prove, to know how much you earned. So for that, they write in a shvua. So the shayla is, so somebody, maybe I don't know if it was one of you, somebody asked, but do we do shvuas nowadays? Does Beis Din really give shvuas nowadays? And so I responded on the spot that no, at least the Batin Imam familiar with don't, but what I said once about was, but here you're being mechayiv yourself to a shua, and you're saying that's based and won't make you. I said like the case of Moda Mix, that's what based is not going to make you take a shua on a regular case. But here I'm telling you, if I want to be putter, that's what I have to do, and you know it could be done. So I saw this issue discussed in the Sfarim. So some say, in the Sefer Mishnas Ribbis, he brings an opinion like what I said, and he says in fact he saw somebody. That he doesn't say who, but somebody adds into the nusach of the Heter Iska, Shim lo yimtzu beistin sheyushbiu salova. Even if we can't find a beistin that's going to be willing to, go require the shua, and so az halova yachali shava me'atzmo bebeis hakneses b'nikita sefer Torah fnei gimel tamicham. You're right in the thing that even if we can't find a beistin that's going to be willing to. Process the matter through a shua, but he'll still be mechayev. We'll have to go. We'll go on our own. We'll go to a shul, take out the sefer Torah, three talmidei chachamim, and then just be in our own. Doesn't have to be a beis din. Just be our own in front of people. So basically, which is essentially what I said last week, more or less, that you're mechayev yourself. You have to swear. That's the story. But then he brings. He says he saw in another sefer, somebody who's close to Rabbi Yashiv, that asked him this shaila, that there's no shvuas nowadays. So how can we write in heteriska shvuah? So Rabbi Yashiv said you could still do it because there are other things which will replace a shvuah, which will serve in place of a shvuah. And he says, for example, the president asked, well, for example, so he said the idea of cherem. What do you say? What is cherem? Cherem means that. Based and will tell him that you should accept upon yourself cherem if you're lying. You know, you claim you earned 2% of the money, so accept upon yourself that if I am, you know, the person should say that if he is lying, he accepts himself a cherem upon himself. That's and that, but he didn't will do. In fact, I mean, nobody should ever have to know from this, but in a get, when they do a get through a shaliach, many times a get isn't given directly from the hand of the husband to the hand of the wife, but it's given, the husband gives it to a shaliach, and the shaliach gives it to the wife, either because they're in different cities, or sometimes they just want to be in, they wish they were in different cities, they don't want to be, unfortunately, they don't want to be in the same base, then at the same time, for, you know, of course, reasons. So it's not through a shaliach. Where the shliach, I mean, if you learn Kitten, you know, they have a shliach leholacha, a shliach that could deliver a get, and there's a concept of shliach lekabbalah, a shliach who could receive the get for the wife. Shliach kabbalah is almost never done nowadays. No such thing as shliach kabbalah, kimat no such thing. But shliach leholacha, where the husband makes shliach, gives it to the wife, that's done, to give it to her personally, that's done quite often. So there, the thing is, when the husband commissions the shliach, so and then the shliach disappears with the get, how do we know he's not going to be mevatel again? He could theoretically be, you know, especially if he goes in front of three people, he could theoretically be mevatel to get, especially, let's see, really, he really wants to, you know, cause trouble for his, the woman that he was married to. So he could be mevatel to get, and then, you know, then and maybe not tell her, and then she goes ahead and thinks she's divorced, and then eventually he'll pull out his card and prove that he's about to, or he'll do it before, he'll change his mind, whatever. So one of the things is it's done that he is mekabel upon himself with a shvu and a cherem, that he's not making mevatel to get to the cherem is it says the lashon shvu, they don't make him take a shvu, but he is mekabel cherem that he will not be mevatel to get, meaning say if he is mevatel to get, like he's mekabel upon himself cherem. So that's a similar idea to what Rabbi Yashiv is saying here.
Right, what's the relevance of the cherem if we don't know if he's lying or not?
No, we're saying if he's a firm person, even he might be a spiteful firm person or a very a bitter firm person who doesn't mind, who the laws of Bein Adam Chaver are not exactly prominent on his table right now, at least vis-a-vis the woman that he was married to, but he's a firm person and he's afraid of a cherem. He doesn't want to be in cherem.
But no one knows, by Rivas.
Yeah.
If I'm lying, should be a
chayim. Right, so a person we're banking that person will be afraid to say that.
But no, that's only good in a case where you don't know if he's lying.
No, good boy, because if nobody knows he's in chayim, they're still going to be nice to him, they'll give him an aliyah. No, but kapi means kapi shmaya too. Like Yehuda. Yehuda, is, you know, he says on the chayim venu, imlo haviyesu velecha, Yehuda put himself in chayim if he wouldn't return Binyamin. And Lamaisu is Niskayim, you know, it says, and that's why he says his bones were rattling in the Aron all the years till Moshe Rabbeinu was called Shema Hashem Kol Yehuda Velamot Tavienu. All the years he was, his bones were rattling and they didn't let him into the Pamalai Shemal because of that Cherem, even though Binyamin was reunited with Yaakov, which is the fact of Makabal Cherem. He was in big trouble. Took tefillas of Moshe Rabbeinu to get him out of it. So it's people that are from people, or hoping at least this will prevent them from doing it. Okay. So anyway, so that, I thought that was interested to find this. I was never aware of this, and I, had somebody not asked it last week, I might not even have caught my eye. But when I it caught my eye now, because the question was raised, and okay. Anyway, so one thing Rabbi Yashiv recommended here is that they should work out with the bank, and this is done not just here, but is that the at the time that the person takes the money, let's say he takes $100,000, so he should be makne to the bank $100,000 worth of in his property, assuming now is not going to work for everyone, but assuming the person has some property, has some real estate, has some assets, so he's makne to the bank a chelik in his nechasim, so that even if he lost that money, but they have a chelik in everything. They don't just have a chelik. They're not just, it's not just that one project that this is what I use the money for. No, but they already own a chelik in his, in other nechasim, so that even if he loses that particular money, or the money he borrowed for a specific purpose, and that money, that purpose didn't pan out, but they have a chelik in other business of his. And in general, that's sometimes done with a heteriska, with a person, especially if the money is being borrowed for not really for a business purpose, like we spoke about last week, but for a questionable business purpose, meaning, let's say, it is being borrowed to buy a house, which you can call it's a business venture in a sense. You buy a house, hopefully you're hoping, like I said, you'll make money on it, but it's not necessarily the most lucrative business to go into if you have $100,000, I don't know, or whatever, $100,000 is not going to get you far, at least not in this neighborhood. Let's say you have $800,000, so, and you ask a money management guy, what should I do with it? He may not tell you, okay, buy a house on the corner of this and this, because, you know, houses are gambles, and there's he may have like 25 other ideas what you do with your $800,000 that you have to invest. But I'm putting into that, I'm borrowing the money from the bank, whatever the amount is, to buy a house. So it's not, or borrowing money maybe from a private individual, maybe like in an owner finance thing. I'm borrowing the money from the owner, basically. Borrowing in the sense that he's selling me his house, and I'm only giving him $100,000, and I owe him another seven. So he's loaning me $7,000, and he wants a return on his money. So what they'll do sometimes is that I will be, give him a chelik, he has a chelik in all my business, in anything I have that could produce money. If, for example, if I own other property or any other business venture I have, so that it's not just banking or counting on this one, on this house or on this one investment. So that's part of what they did here. He also said it has to be made crystal clear, both sides, including the bank, have to understand exactly the terms of the heter iska and have to agree to it. He also put in a few other things, like, for example, if the person who borrowed the money or who took the money claims that he lost, then they could put into the contract that he the 50% that he owes immediately. It's due immediately upon claiming loss. You owe the money immediately. You don't have any time to pay, you know, to pay that back, which is not necessarily automatically the case. And he also says the one who receives the money should give a written report to the bank on a monthly basis about the status of the investment, you know, the money that they took. It's not always to buy a house. I mean, the person buys money. Plenty of people borrow money rather, for, you know, or whatever, to put into their business. So they should provide a weekly report to the bank, monthly or whatever, he says, whatever increments they decide upon, should give keep the bank updated as to the progress of you know, his, so that he can't just turn around after 3 years and say, oh, I'm sorry, it all went south. But he should be, he, you know, it's just more a question of accountability, that this way they will have more, hopefully, I think that's what this accomplishes, they'll have more confidence in the fact that he's being honest with them, etc. And they also mentioned the idea that he recommends to anyone who opens a bank account in Eretz Yisrael, which is going to involve any form of ribis, even if it's opening an account where you're the malva, you're depositing money and you're getting back something for them, that they should sign specifically on the paper that this is all being done al pi heter iska. Even if there's a heter iska klali hanging up there, but they should write on the paper specifically. That's make it crystal clear that it's all being done al pi heter iska. These are some of the some of the things he puts into place here. What I wanted to discuss now is that what happens all too frequently is that people either forget to do a heter iska and they borrow money, or they know about it, they didn't forget, but you know, it's something we have to take care of. Meanwhile, I need the money, and he lends them the money, and they think it's more like a something that has to get done, you know, at some point. But lav davka, that the whole deal is had, and they don't even necessarily speak out that the money's being given over heter iska. If you do that, you know, minimally, that's what you have to do. When if you need a chance to get into all the details and write it up, but minimally you have to at least speak out. It has to be clearly understood in two parties that two individuals that are both from and they want to do it right. I'm giving you this money or taking this money according to the laws of Heter Iska, Alpi Nusach Maram, or according to what it says in the Chachmas Adam, like we said last week. At least it should be spoken out that is clear a deal, and then maybe we'll draw up the shtar later. We'll work out the fine print later. But sometimes people don't do that, and it slipped their mind. They forgot about it, or Pasha didn't know about it. Especially if you're dealing if one side is not firm, or both sides are not so firm and not so knowledgeable. And then it comes to their attention that this is a problem. You can't have a loan. You can't be paying interest to another Jew, and they want to now implement heter iska. So the question is how to go about that. So the best thing really is to end the old loan, to pay back all the money right then, and start over again. So they say, well, pay back all the money, but I borrowed $200,000. To to buy whatever or to do whatever, and I spent the money. It's gone, and now I owe it over. I have 20 years to pay back this $200,000. I don't have $200,000 to pay back. I want to switch to an ISCA, but how am I going to pay back? So there are two ways given. One way is if you have a friend who does have $200,000 in the bank, and who trusts you, and is willing to write out a check, a valid check or a promissory note, saying an IOU, saying to the bearer of this note is entitled to $200,000 of mine, signed by Mr. Richman, who he has the money, and he trusts you. So you take the money and you give it to the guy that you borrowed the money from. You owe him $200,000. Here's your $200,000. Pay. This is a valid check or a valid promissory note. That guy has the money in the bank, and you can it's collectible upon demand. Okay, now, if you would kindly return it to me, I'll pay it. I want to now, quote unquote, borrow, or I want you to invest with me. $200,000. Give me back that $200,000. I'll pay Heter Iska, which we write out the Heter Iska with all the terms of what it's going to be, and he gives you back that thing, and you promptly either give it back to the guy so he could stop sweating, or you rip it up or whatever, so that that's finished. So it's just a matter of trust, right? It's real. It's real. You pay back the loan is paid back, and if the guy decides, you know what, I don't think I want to give it to you anyway. So you may have a situation where somebody you owe somebody else now $200,000 without interest, but usually if you're dealing with Erlicha people and they really want to switch it to a Heter Iska, so there's trust, and this is one way of doing it. Another way of doing it, let's say you don't have such a good friend, or at least not such a good friend who has the money to who has that money in the bank for you. And maybe it's more than $200,000, maybe it's $2 million, whatever it is. So then it's $2 million. I don't think the next eitz is going to work either, unless you're awfully wealthy. But the next eitz is, let's say, if you own property, let's say you have a house. You have a house which is worth, let's just say, $500,000. And you borrowed $50,000 from somebody, and then you realized, oh, I can't, and you're paying him, you promised him interest, and he said, we got to switch this to an iska. So, but you already spent the cash, so you make a kinyan with him. And you're maknet to him a share in your house, $50,000 worth of my home. I'm maknet to you that we are now partners. This house was standing on the corner of, Main and Maple, which till now was mine. You are now a partner. You own $50,000 of the value. I own the other $450,000, but you own $50,000. So now I'm paid off. You're paid back in property, and now, return it to me. It'd be maknet back to me the $50,000 value that I'll have to pay you for it, and you mocked me again as an iska. So those are two ways of doing it. That's the best thing. Pay off the loan and start fresh. If it's not possible, for whatever reason, neither of those eitzes are implementable, so some of the posts can allow just simply switching mikan al haba. That, okay, till now it was ribbis, and that's unfortunate, but we'll just convert it without paying it off and starting fresh. We'll just convert it with that. We both agree that moving ahead, this is no longer considered a loan, which I owe. Come what may, I owe it, and I'm giving you a return on your money. No, that's not the case anymore. It is now an iska, which, according to the terms of the iska, that I have to, I can bring Adam to say that I lost the money, or I can make a shuwa to say that I only gained, half the money. But if I don't do that, I have to pay you 10% or whatever make up. So if you can't do it the first way, you should at least do it that way to convert it. That mikan laba, it'll be an iska. There's a whole machlokas poskim about if a person did pay, let's say a person took a loan with interest, no iska, and then he realizes this problem. So is it considered, and you already made a few payments, right? So now let's say a typical mortgage. You found out, you realized the bank that you took the mortgage from is a Jewish bank or a Jewish lender, and you had no idea, and there's no heter iska in place. So I've already paid money, and the according to the bank's system, according to the official records, the money I paid was largely interest, right? Everybody knows that when you first start paying off a mortgage, it's most of it's interest, and then slowly the ratio changes. But you're paying interest from day one, even though you owe them 99% of the principal. So Ramesh Zatzal holds that that's not called interest, because until you pay more than the principal, I didn't pay interest. I borrowed $500,000 and I paid back $2,000. So where's the interest? I didn't pay anywhere near the Karen. Oh, they call it. They say that $2,000, they only gave me credit for $50, and they call the other $1,950. They call that interest. But he said that's irrelevant in terms of halacha. Others, there's a big machlokas achron about this point, whether it has a shame, actual shame ribbis, and an afkamina lamashal, would they have to return it?
I'll say there is a very big nafkamina. I bought a house and then we refinanced. I was very busy with this, and the first I dealt with a few mortgage brokers, and one said that when you deal with a broker, then the bank then buys out the loan, right? So you don't apply to the bank, but the bank deals with the broker. So the broker holds on. Some of them do it like the same day. The same day you give the check goes right to the bank, but this broker, It's a Jewish office. They said they hold on to the loan for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and then they sell it to the bank. And during those 2 weeks, we have a heter iska. So according to what you're saying, they might not need a heter iska, because during those 2 weeks, even if I pay the first check, which I don't, because you don't pay the first bill till the first month is done. But they don't really need a heter iska.
Well, but the truth is, though, the only time I'm aware of Ramesh is saying he's talking about lachar ha'maisa. I don't know if he's saying lachatchila. You can just go ahead and do it.
Good,
so lachar ha'maisa would not be viewed as ribbis legabe, various nafkaminas as returning money and other such things, or is it considered that you would do it? But what you're saying is a very important point also, that this is something to be very often when mortgages go through either a broker or just a bridge lender who lends. Sometimes it's 2 weeks, sometimes even a bit longer. They hold on to it and then they flip it over to someone else. So even if you dealt, even if the first person, the immediate party you dealt with was a yid that you were able to get a heter iska with, or he was a guy, but when the mortgage might end up in the hands of a Jew. And now, sometimes you don't know. You don't know what they're doing with it, but sometimes you do know. And they might tell you in advance that we sell 90% of our mortgages, we sell to, X. There was, not long ago, there was a well-known lender, a very big-time lender, that was Jewish, and originally, for a long time, did not work with the Heter Iska. And a lot of Rabbanim and people involved in Dinim Amunus and things that were worked with them for a long time to try to convince them and to switch to Heter Iska, because a lot of Jews had loans for them, etc., or wanted to take loans for them, and eventually they did. I'm not sure where it's holding now. I haven't mentioned the name, so it's not in the game, but I'm not sure where it's holding now, if it's being done properly or not. I know at the beginning there was still some pikpukim even when they had a Heter Iska, so I don't know where it's holding, but it is something to be conscious of if you ever do take a loan from a bank or any lender, especially if you're buying a house. Or, I shouldn't say especially, but that's a common situation. So then you want to make your best effort at least to find out, if, to the extent that you can, if the lender is Jewish or not. And if, as I said, if the loan is going to be converted, and in either case, you should, if it's going to be in the hands of a Jew at any point, it really should be done with the bank. Yeah. Okay. We'll hold it for now. I'm thinking. I'm not sure exactly. But I think next week we might go into it. Maybe we'll do like one more week or so in Ribbis. There are still a lot of stuff to do, but I'm thinking of moving on to something else, but I'm not sure yet what. So I'm going to give it some thought. And
I'll tell you, I learned Chaim Berlin, so Chalka and
Benjamin. Oh, yeah, sure.
And I had a CD account.
Yes.
You know what that is?
Sure.
So